So can I now introduce our final speaker for the day, Nicole Gamarov from Swiss Re. Since Nicole joined Swiss Re in 2001, she's been involved in a number of business development roles, using her finance background to develop new products and new client segments. And Nicole has responsibility for Swiss Re's public sector clients in Australia, New Zealand and the Pacific Islands. She started her professional career with Deloitte, after which she was appointed CFO of a listed company, Cadiz Investment Bank. So over to you, Nicole, to talk about mental health.
Right. Thank you, David, and thank you for the introduction, and I have to say thank you to the Actuaries Institute for inviting me to present today. I'd also like to thank my colleague, Laura Wood, who's in the room this afternoon, who helped me do some preparation for today. So thanks, Laura. So, mental illness. Is this the perfect storm? Imagine that a large and complex low-pressure cell is heading towards the insurance industry, combined with increasing levels of politicization, media coverage, and court challenges could lead to widespread devastation and destruction. And my question to you as actuaries and as the insurance industry, what are we doing to avoid this devastation and destruction? So what I'll do today in the 15, 20 minutes that I have is give you an overview of the facts. What are the facts? What are the statistics? Give you a bit of a global overview around the costs and economic impact of mental illness. Then compare this to Australia and how this the global perspective compares to the Australian perspective. And then we'll go through a couple of portfolios and finally try and wrap up with what are we doing and what can we do better. What I'd like to achieve today at the end of the presentation is to actually make you feel uncomfortable. Sorry about that, but I think as a profession, nobody is as well equipped as the actuarial profession to do something about the challenges that we face in this country and globally around mental illness. So that is my challenge to you today. So what are the facts? One in five people have a mental disorder, and 45% of Australians will suffer from mental illness at some stage during their lifetime. So that means nearly half of us in this room will suffer from mental illness during our lifetime. Now, some of you may say that's unrealistic. How can that be? The definition of mental illness is actually very broad. So it covers things like anxiety and depression that perhaps people weren't aware are included in this. It's a disorder that can be that can actually be diagnosed that impacts someone's cognitive, emotional, and social well-being. So on a global scale, the World Health Organization predicts that by 2030, depression will be the number one health concern. In Australia, depression and anxiety are already outstripping other causes of disability and health concerns. So when we look at the life insurance industry, by far mental illness is outstripping some other better known diseases like cancer, diabetes, and such like. Those numbers are quite stark as well. The World Health Organization recently put out these numbers that in 1990, 416 million people suffered from depression, but by 2013, that had gone up to 615 million. That's almost a billion people. So why is it so important? Why is it such an important issue? Well, the main reason is because of the economic drag that this has on our economies globally. So anxiety and depression are costing the world economy $1 trillion. In Australia alone, we spend $28 billion per annum. That's 2.2% of GDP supporting people with mental illness. And in the US, Serious mental illness costs them $193 billion in lost earnings. And of course, we can debate around, well, how they come up with these numbers and does it include indirect costs? In fact, these numbers don't include indirect costs. So in Australia, that number almost doubles when we include indirect costs. And that's why this issue is important. When you combine these staggering numbers with the political spotlight that it's recently been receiving, plus the media constantly having this in the media spotlight, I do believe that the industry is potentially heading for a storm. And if we just, for a moment, think about what's happened and what's played out around far north Queensland and how the industry had to scramble to acquire data that was meaningful, that could actually demonstrate why insurance premiums had gone up. Should we not be managing for change now, rather than being put in a situation where we have a royal commission or government inquiry and then scrambling to create or pull the data together? So globally, what is happening? Well, mental illness has been in the shadows for many, many years. Until recently, and in fact, just this month, the World Health Organization and the OECD had a conference where they brought together a number of finance ministers to discuss how addressing mental illness can actually be improved and how this can improve the economies that this is impacting. And they came up with four measures. And really, this is very similar to what we should be thinking about in Australia. So the first is measuring mental health. So one of the big issues and challenges that we face in Australia and globally is that we don't have a holistic data set of mental illness. We have data sets that exist in the life insurance industry. We have data sets that sit in the general insurance industry. But we do not have a holistic picture of mental illness. So if we don't have the data set, how can we know where to invest the dollars in terms of improving these numbers? Secondly, the OECD recommended that we need to increase evidence-based services for mild and moderate disorders and better outcome for severe mental illness. And again, both of these issues are hampered by the lack of data. So if you don't have the data and you don't have an idea of the investments that you're making and the outcomes that they're achieving, well, then how can you ever justify making those investments in the first place? And a big issue is making the link between work and mental health. So as an insurance industry, workers' compensation is impacted by mental illness. I haven't been to a single meeting with a client where we've spoken about workers' compensation where this hasn't come up. And everyone feels uncomfortable about it, and everybody knows it's an issue. And yet no single organization has actually got their head around developing data sets or developing or thinking of ways to overcome the lack of data. The other issue is it's one thing having the data, but are we actually considering the soft factors that need to be taken into account? This is different from natural catastrophe modeling. We're talking about humans. This is a human-centric problem. And how is the industry taking into account soft factors? We're very good at considering the numbers, the statistics, and the models. How many of your models actually consider the soft factors? So what is the challenge in Australia? Take a look at the slide. So natural catastrophes are costing our economy roughly $6 billion per annum, and that number comes from the Productivity Commission's inquiry into natural disasters. But mental illness dwarfs this. It's costing us $28 billion per annum. And yet, we can predict and model natural catastrophes with ever-increasing levels of granularity, yet we lack comprehensive data sets around mental illness, and we have a fragmented approach both as a profession and as an industry. Mental illness doesn't discriminate, yet we do. We discriminate between disability insurance, income protection, workers' compensation, and CTP. We do ourselves no favors because there's a lack of working together. So each of us works in our silos. There's no sharing of best practice. we just have to take a minute to think about what happened in 2012 when New South Wales Workers' Comp had their reforms and the almost direct correlation that that had to the disability payments that the life insurance suffered. That ran into the hundreds of millions of dollars. If the life industry and the general insurance industry had perhaps had closer collaboration on the topic of mental illness, could this have been avoided? So the next part of my presentation, I'll take you through a couple of snapshots of portfolio views that are impacted by mental illness. And unfortunately, I'd love to stand up here and give you an industry-wide view, a country-wide view. Not possible. We tried, Laura and I, but there's no single data set. So what we're forced to do is look at this in isolation. And something that's of interest and that comes up quite regularly is how does mental illness manifest post-natural catastrophes. And you hear people talking about post-Christchurch earthquakes. There were 2,000 mental illness claims, and this was totally unexpected. So we did a little bit of digging. We spoke to some people in Christchurch. We spoke to the Department of Health in the Canterbury District. And there were some observations, and there were some very interesting studies that were done. But in general, what the final findings, so after a period of time, was that the predictors of distress were higher levels of exposure to earthquake-related stressors, neuroticism, and prior mental health disorders. So the pre-existing condition, it definitely is a predictor in terms of who ultimately suffers from mental illness. Now, that's not necessarily something new. But what was interesting was that people with unresolved insurance issues suffered higher levels of mental health. Another observation, which I think is important to realize when quoting however many claims, mental health claims there are post-natural disasters, is that most people actually bounce back. So most people do recover and there isn't a lasting impact. But those that don't necessarily bounce back are those where they have some pre-existing conditions. The next portfolio view that I wanted to take a look at is workers' compensation. Now, most of you will probably be quite familiar with this observation that we're seeing reduced frequency of claims in workers' comp around mental illness, but an increased severity of those claims. And if you look at the graph on the right-hand side, you'll see that that mental illness claims are almost four times the cost of non-mental health stress claims. That's staggering, especially when you think that a lot of these mental health claims are ones that we can do something about these claims. A lot of the drivers relate to bullying and work stress. This is something that employers can actually do something about. We can manage this problem. Another interesting observation that the OECD recently put out was that people with mental disorders are less effective at work, more likely to be absent from work, and more likely to be out of work. And this is a key issue that Swiss Re is trying to promote with other stakeholders in the industry, is promoting the idea of the health benefits of good work. Gone are the days where people think that work is bad for you. Good work is good for you. It's good for your health. But the emphasis has to be on the good work. And so this is a key area where we can start doing something, and we are as an industry. I believe that we're making progress in this space. Another portfolio view which I wanted to offer you today was the income protection. Now, again, these portfolios are often managed quite separately. So depending on whether you've got a white-collar portfolio or a blue-collar portfolio, these claims are managed quite differently. And in fact, even talking to some of the underwriters within these portfolios, claims are often managed on an individual basis because it's a human-centric issue, because we're dealing with individuals where often you have a number of mental health issues that are combining to create complexities. But as you can see, no surprises again, that mental illness dwarfs the other contributors, so musculoskeletal and cancer, both in terms of total reserves and in terms of the number of claims. Now, some of you may be thinking, what about all the other types of claims we may have? What we did was we just focused on the three major contributors in terms of the income protection portfolio. So, of course, there will be other types of claims, but those are really not significant. So, what does this mean for you as actuaries who are pricing mental health claims and reserving for mental health claims? You've got a tough job. I don't envy you. Each case is unique. Accurate diagnosis is challenging. Often, a big issue is the delayed treatment, so people often don't admit that they have a mental illness, and then treatment is delayed, and that exacerbates the problem. There are detection problems, and as I said, there's contributing and complex multiple issues at play. And then the long-term nature of these claims has a financial impact for us as an industry. But let's just take a moment to look at the graph. So this graph relates to a workers' compensation portfolio. It dates back to 2007. And the gist of this graph is saying that the sooner we get people back to work, or the sooner they get help, the more likely they are to get back to work. So if you look at within 20 days of actually making a claim, if people if the waiting period of getting help is 20 days, the chances of people getting back to work is about 70%. But as that reduces, and the amount of time that they spend away from work increases, they're less likely to ever go back to work. And sadly, a lot of the rehabilitation programs only start at this point. So what that's telling us is that we as an industry are not actually helping ourselves. If we can move that rehabilitation program forward, bring it forward to the first 20 days, you've got a much better chance of getting that person back to work. And, of course, that has a massive implication for the duration of the claim and the cost of the claim. Swiss Re is doing research around some of the biopsychosocial indicators that predict whether people are likely to go back to work or not. I'm unable to share the results of our study because it's not yet complete, but some of the biopsychosocial factors are people's work ethic, their ability to cope, so coping skills. And these are the soft factors that I was referring to earlier. So this requires actuaries to think outside the box and combine more innovative ways of predicting how these claims are going to play out. So in conclusion, we're dealing with a complex problem, but there is a lot that we can do, and there's a lot that we can do now. And I do believe that as a profession, the actuaries are the guardians of metrics. And it's the metrics that are going to drive improvements in the space. And I believe that cross-sector collaboration can start with the actuarial profession. So we need to bring life insurers and general insurers together to speak more openly about claims management, to share data. We need employers to be more open to the medical fraternity on how these claims are going to be managed. We need governments to help coordinate data collection and disability organizations to be collaborative with the industry to work on improving these claims and the management of these claims. We need less fragmented policies, and when one government moves on and another one takes over, we need funding continuity. But at the end of the day, it's better data that's going to drive better outcomes. We've seen that in the Danish and in the Nordic countries, where they have far greater return to work and far greater outcomes because they're able to get the data and monitor outcomes. And finally, we need a greater understanding of the health benefits of good work. So thank you for your time, and I look forward to your questions.